When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, everybody. It is Trags Mike Petralia back with another episode of the Jungle War podcast powered by CLNS Media and Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in all of North America. Well, the news, of course, this week is happening hot and heavy in Bengaland, as it is throughout the NFL, of course. Free agency has come about us, and one big piece of news right off the top. I'm joined by Richard Skinner, Skinny of Local 12. Right off the top is the trade of Joe Mixon. We initially thought, Skinny, that it was going to be a release of Joe Mixon, save that $3 million roster bonus that he was due on Sunday. But as it turns out, the Bengals will trade him to the Houston Texans. Why? Because the Texans lost Devin Singletary to the New York Giants. So they had a need, and the Bengals wanted to move on from Joe Mixon. Sounds like a win-win to me.
Yeah, I was wondering, because obviously there would be a compensatory pick equivalent for Joe Mixon if he signed with a team. I'm assuming, because we've not heard what the get back is yet, that they felt maybe they were getting back in the trade value, and it probably is not a lot, but maybe they think it's more than what they would have gotten in the compensatory pick. That's really the only way this makes sense to me. But again, you know, you get something for it, and that always makes sense, because they were going to move on from Joe Mixon. With the tea leaves have been on the wall since October the 18th, when Brian Callahan said the famous quote of, "We get what's blocked and not much more."
Correct. And I do think the Bengals were doing Mixon a solid here, because they're trading him to a very good offense, a very sensational young quarterback in C.J. Stroud. There are worse places Joe Mixon could have been sent off to, or worry about what he's going to do, who's going to pick him up, because let's face it, you know, yes, he had his, I believe it was third career 1,000-yard rushing season this past year, and he's still productive, but he wasn't going to get, you know, huge numbers. As it is, he's going to a team that certainly has a need for a running back like him. And it looks like, to me, he lands on it in a soft landing spot to continue his career.
Yeah, I mean, Devin Singletary had big games last year, including against the Bengals, and kind of a revival from him, because, you know, he kind of washed out in Buffalo. And, you know, he obviously did enough to get signed by another team. I do go back to wondering, though, Mike, because, again, they were ready to move on from Joe Mixon. The tea leaves, we all read them. We all knew it was coming, all of those things. To trade him inside the conference to a playoff-caliber team that you may have to go through, again, I think you're right. They did do him a solid, because he's got a chance to do some things there. But it makes me wonder even more if they just thought, there's just not much left in the tank and we're not worried about this.
And maybe they're getting more back in return than we initially to believe. So we'll see how that turns out. And certainly the Texans did have a need, and again, they fulfill that need. And now let's move on to the flip side of the coin. Joe Mixon's not here. The Bengals still save his $6.1 million cap charge that they were going to get if they were to cut him anyway. So they still get to save that. They pick up Zach Moss. He was drafted out of Utah by the Buffalo Bills, spent his first three seasons with the Bills, last two seasons with the Indianapolis Colts. And it's a classic Bengal signing to me in free agency. Low risk, high reward. They're not spending a lot of money. And I think the fact that they're bringing on a guy like Zach Moss, 2 years, $8 million, I guess, includes a $4.525 million guarantee or payout in year one. So your read on adding Zach Moss to the roster?
It was a guy, actually, when I did six different positional free agency pieces last week as previews, and it was kind of the guy I targeted because of not just player value. I mean, look, if you were going to go player value, I would say go pluck Derrick Henry, go plus Josh Jacobs. You're also looking for financial value in that regard. I didn't think they were going to spend more than what they saved in salary cap savings from Joe Mixon, which is about $6.1 million. So
great point.
Somewhere in that range, that's where they landed, basically, is about a $4 million average per year. They actually saved a little bit. And I think to the quotes from Zach Taylor at the Combine about Chase Brown and about how excited he is to see what he can do with more touches and what we saw Chase Brown do down the stretch, I truly think they were looking for not a bell cow back, just a rotational back. And I think you'll see, I don't want to say it'll be split up 50-50, but it might be in workload, and you don't need to spend for that. And you'd certainly, if that's the route you were going to go with Joe Mixon in a best-case scenario to keep him, was splitting exact time with Chase Brown, well, that's a big number to carry for a rotational back, in my opinion. This is not. It's $2 million less. You can put it into something else. They still got a bunch of needs that I know we're going to talk about here, and it doesn't sound like much, but that $2 million could go a long way in some regards.
Well, and that's the whole thing. And I wrote about this on Sunday in my, you know, Bengals beat notes column, that the Bengals do have a lot of areas to fill, and they are not a team that likes to spend a lot in one position. They like to spread out the pie, if you will. And, you know, the Blackburns are very fond of using that term, that, and Duke Tobin is as well.
Tobin especially, yeah.
Yeah, especially Duke is fond of using, you know, the pie is only so big and there are only so many ways that you can split it. And once it's gone, it's gone. So I think that is what the Bengals have in mind here when you're talking about, you know, spreading out the money. I would be shocked if the free agency doesn't end, or when this week ends, the Bengals have not invested in defensive tackles and in an offensive tackle.
I would agree. And probably a depth piece at cornerback, a veteran depth piece at corner at a very reasonable rate. And honestly, maybe that depth piece at corner comes in part because of this $2 million savings in the running back room. You allocate it to some other place. And I think it's a smart way to go about it. You know, you've got your rotational running back. They signed Mike Gesicki as a second tight end after re-signing Drew Sample. I still fully expect them to get back Tanner Hudson and or Mitchell Wilcox to fill that room out. Then you've signed Geno Stone at safety to then at the very least it's your backup plan if Dax Hill doesn't pan out, or they're already ready to shove Dax to the cornerback position like we all believe they are. So, you know, they had a lot of needs, Mike, in this free agency cycle. And I think they're going to do a great job of addressing all of those. I know everybody wants the splash signing, the star player, the difference maker.
Right.
Well, last I checked, you got a difference maker. He wears number 9. You got a difference maker. He wears number 1. You got a couple. You got a difference maker on defense. He wears number 91. You got some difference makers, man.
Now you need to build up the depth. This is Trags Mike Petralia, host of the Jungle Roar podcast on the CLNS Media Network. I want to tell you about Prize Picks. It's the largest daily fantasy sports platform in all of North America. They are the easiest and definitely most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers, and instead of battling thousands of other players, including some really good pros out there, you pick more than or less than 2 to 6 player stat projections and just watch the winnings roll in. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Prize Picks offers weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts like Taco Tuesday. That's each Tuesday, Prize Picks discounts select player projections up to 25% to provide even more value. Prize Picks now offers Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account this basketball season. Go to prizepicks.com/CLNS and use code CLNS for your first deposit match up to $100. Again, go to prizepicks.com/CLNS and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. I want to finish up a few things here on Zach Moss. Last year, 14 carries. 14 games, I should say, 183 carries, 794 yards, not bad, 4.3 yards per carry. I'd say that's an average. Year before, 76 carries, 365, that's 4.8. That's, I think, more along the lines of what the Bengals would like to see from the 26-year-old Zach Moss, that 2022 season with the Colts, when, of course, he was running tandem with Jonathan Taylor. Had something to do with that, I'm sure. But, you know, he's got 6 touchdowns rushing over the last 2 seasons after having 4 touchdowns in each of his first 2 seasons with Buffalo. So we'll see if the production ticks up this year, as I think what will happen is what you kind of alluded to, Skinny. He's going to kind of share the load in the backfield with Chase Brown. In terms of his receiving production, last year, 27 catches, which was a career high, on 37 targets, 192 yards, averaged 7.1 yards, and he did have 2 touchdowns. So he is a guy that I think the Bengals can look to, not just to run the ball, but catch the ball as well. I want to get on to the tight end position because a friend of mine back in New England, did you know I used to cover the Patriots?
I did not. Are you in the Netflix? Are you in the Dynasty special, by the way?
Tune in episode 7, Skinny, midway through. That guy that asked Tom Brady, what did you know and when did you know it? That would be somebody you're talking to right now.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. So there's really that. Good, by the way. But anyway, Mike Gesicki, I think, is a fascinating sign for the Bengals. He signs here in Cincinnati for 1 year. Get the number here. Worth up to $3.25 million. Obviously, again, very low risk, high reward. Somebody told me in New England that this is a guy that could maybe spell a little bit of Tyler Boyd's role, getting downfield, getting open. He's not known for his blocking skills, but he is known as a pass catcher. And if you take a look at his numbers between 2019 with Miami and 2021 with Miami, those 3 seasons, he averaged 695 yards, 13 yards a catch, and he had 13 touchdowns. That's great production from your tight end.
Yeah, and I'm going to take this past year in New England with a little bit of a grain of salt. When you mention the numbers, they sound low, and they are low, and there's 2 factors. I mean, he split time with Hunter Henry, number 1,
right,
and Mac Jones was a disaster of a quarterback, number 2, and that offense was a disaster, number 3.
Right.
This feels very much I tried to equate it in my mind to the Hayden Hurst signing, where you saw production in the past from him. Hayden was a former first-round talent. Gesicki's a former second-round talent. You alluded to the success he had in Miami. He's not old by any stretch of the imagination. I thought with Irv Smith, they were trying to catch lightning in a bottle, and they didn't. I thought with Hayden Hurst, it was more him getting the opportunity again to be the man, and he showed it. And this feels like this is kind of that type of signing. It would not shock me to see Mike Gesicki get back to that 50-plus catch, 600-yard level as a receiving tight end for the Bengals, unless they bring back Tanner Hudson and he fills some of that role too. If it's Mike Gesicki as your main receiving tight end, I think he easily gets to those numbers.
And the thing is, Skinny, that I've noticed with Joe Burrow is he wants his tight ends to win off the line of scrimmage. If they win off the line of scrimmage, win downfield, he's going to get the ball to the tight end. The problem, and I think even yours truly included, kind of forgets sometimes, is the reason Joe Burrow hasn't been throwing to the tight end a lot is they're not open. And to not be open for Joe Burrow is saying something, because what is the old expression Joe Burrow likes to use? If I can see your helmet, you're open. Yep. Well, that's a problem. And if Joe Burrow doesn't think you're open, you know, obviously the ball's not coming your way. He's not going to usually not going to force it unless your name's Ja'Marr Chase or T. Higgins. Speaking of T. Higgins, Skinny, your thoughts on David Mulugeta, Athletes First, coming out on Monday and essentially speaking for, through sources, I would assume, speaking for T. Higgins, demanding a trade. What was your read on that?
Bless their heart. God love you. I mean, you have no leverage in this game, my man. You have none. I mean, that's the funny part to this. And to the Bengals' credit, when we were at the combine and we all wrote it, you know, they didn't slam the door on a potential trade. They didn't say it out loud that, hey, we're taking trade offers. It was implied. Hey, you want to give us an offer. But as you know, Mike, A, the offer has to be off the charts for you to consider it. There's not a lot of teams that can make that off the chart offer. And then B, that team also has to have the understanding that they're going to likely sign him to an extension. There's a lot of moving parts there. And so if teams don't come at the Bengals with some mega offer, and I don't suspect that's going to take place, then what are you going to do, David Mulligan, T. Higgins? I know what you're going to do. You're not going to come to OTAs. That's fine. They're voluntary. Jesse Bates didn't either. Everybody in the world, their teammates all understand that. You'll pout and maybe think you're showing some leverage by not coming to training camp right away like Jesse Bates did. In the end, Jesse Bates knew what he had to do, which was sign the franchise tag, play on the franchise tag, you know, hold his breath that he didn't get hurt, but he played great and he got paid. And that's where T. Higgins is not coming off of a great year. He had some drop issues. He's got a lingering injury history that even made me wonder whether they should franchise tag him. I'm not against it. I think I would have gone either way with it. But you have no leverage in this deal. You can say you're not going to not play on the tag. I mean, you're just not. You're not going to give up 21.8
million. Last player, I think, that of note to not do that with Le'Veon Bell, right?
I mean, correct. And that was later in his career. Right. And I think that whole instance was – at that point, I think everybody understands, yeah, we got no leverage in this game. We can try all we want. I mean, hey, as players, you dudes collectively bargained this, man. It's something that teams are allowed to use, and they used it. And I always feel for that guy in the last year of his rookie deal, like a T that's hoping for the extension, and when the sides can't come to it, you know they're likely going to tag him. At the same time, the tag of $21.8 million is guaranteed upon signing it. If you get hurt in week one of next season and don't play again, they owe you $21.8 million. I know it's not $94 million over 4 years or whatever the heck you think they think they're going to get. I get that, but it's pretty damn good generational wealth for 1 year of service.
And frankly, there's very few injuries that are truly, knock wood here, career ending. I mean, any injury you can come back from.
I think he needs to show the market too, Mike. I think if he thinks he's going to get paid like a one, I think he needs to have a season that's commensurate to being a one. And I don't think he had that this past year. Not even close.
I think, you know, he would tell you that, yeah, that's probably because look at the other side that I'm playing with, and that's Ja'Marr Chase, and look at Tyler Boyd, look at all the other options that have been there in the Bengals passing game. Also, did you find it significant that Mulugeta put in there that little stipulation that he really still loves Cincinnati, you know, would love to come back and play long-term with Cincinnati, just not under these terms? He had to put that in there just to make sure there were no sore feelings.
And I do think there's some truth to that. I just think they're at an impasse where the Bengals have their number, Mulugeta has his number, and they're just not going to budge off of it either way. You know, Mulugeta, he gets what he wants to. He gets what he gets for his clients. He's really good at it. I mean, you see a bunch of these free agents that are signing are Mulugeta clients. He got Jesse Bates paid. Again, you may have been holding your breath that whole year that he played on the tag, but you got your guy paid, and good for you. The Bengals are at a number. They're at a number. And it seems like since March of last year, they haven't moved off that number, and neither side's willing to do so. That's why T sounded and I'm using quotes here because it's not a direct quote from him. It was, you know, from Adam Schefter, who reported it initially, that, you know, he's disappointed they haven't had talks since March of last year. Well, again, if you're on a number, they're on a number, and neither one of you are going to budge in any way, there ain't nothing to talk about anymore.
By the way, I know you had alluded to it earlier. We're jumping all over the map. I'm talking with Richard Skinner of Channel 12 here in Cincinnati. Local 12 Skinny is where you can find him on X. You alluded to Irv Smith Jr. Adam Schefter, as we're recording this, has the news that Irv Smith Jr. has reached an agreement with the Kansas City Chiefs on a one-year deal. Good for Irv Smith.
We got like seven tight ends out there. Good luck making the club, kid.
I mean, with Travis Kelce still coming back, we assume, for another year, you know, obviously, you know, that's a great situation for Irv, though. I mean, you know, I think he's got a chance certainly to make the roster as maybe the third tight end out there on a team that they do feature the tight end and they do want depth. And maybe, who knows, maybe Travis Kelce doesn't take as many snaps, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, he's probably not going to take many snaps either because he stinks. But there's that.
That's harsh, but the production would kind of suggest the production of 2023 with the Cincinnati Bengals would kind of suggest that. Okay, another player that I also alluded to in my column on Sunday would be a possibility, and I know you spoke of him earlier, Skinny, is Geno Stone. I find this to be a fascinating signing, a very potentially smooth and surreptitious signing, a very strategic signing for the Bengals to add a 24-year-old safety to their roster. We'll be 25 shortly. But I think it's an significant move for the Bengals to add depth on the back end. And he is very respected by the Bengals as somebody who is kind of a ball hawk.
Yeah. In fact, you know, like I said, I did those each day, different position groups, and he's kind of the guy I landed on at safety. Again, I listed like all the guys ranked, and then you have to do the caveat of, hey, these guys at the top of this level, they're not going to pay that kind of money. Right. When you went down the chart and you kind of looked at kind of market value, and I know you do the same thing, go to spotrac.com and they kind of right. set a market value that's not etched in stone. It just gives you a ballpark, and their ballpark figure for him was 3 years, $21.6 million. And I think I wrote that $7 million average sounds about right. And what do they end up getting him for? 2 years and $15 million. And
That's great money, if you ask me.
It's a perfect fit. It's a perfect value. Yeah. I know if you want to be a cynic about the signing, you can draw a comparison to Nick Scott, because Nick only really started 1 year in his career with the Rams. Kind of the same for Geno Stone. This past year was kind of his first time as a full-time starter. But to your point, he had a high grade. I think he was graded the seventh highest graded pass coverage safety in the NFL from Pro Football Focus. He led all safeties in the NFL with interceptions with seven, made a bunch of big plays for them. And it feels like he's more of a merging player than Nick Scott was more of a, hey, we need another safety. We got to go get somebody, and more of a depth piece. Yeah, a bridge. Good point. I think Geno Stone is a legit starter back there. Now you can make your decision on Dax Hill. Maybe you can kick the tires on Dax as a safety in OTAs and see how the communication's going and if it works out. But as Lou Anarumo told us at the combine, right? He said we want to give him one thing to do. To me, that would sound like if we can get our veteran safety, we are going to start this process of moving Dax back to the corner position full time. And then Dax on your roster, Mike, if you've got Jordan Battle and Geno Stone, and then your depth pieces, and it may be somebody different. For now, let's just say Nick Scott, Tyson Anderson, those are your four safeties. Dax does give you a fifth safety option for depth purposes if something happens, and it wouldn't be catastrophic. I mean, again, he didn't play great last year, but it's not like you're sticking somebody back there who's never played if that's the case. So I think it's a perfect signing because it gives you a veteran, to go along with an emerging Jordan Battle, and it gives you the chance now to do something with Dax Hill that I think still makes him a very productive player for them moving forward.
And it also, let's not forget, it gives you a player that knows Lamar Jackson, played yep. with Lamar on the other side of the ball, of course. But
he's dead to Lamar Jackson now, Lamar says.
What's that?
I thought Lamar's tweet was pretty good.
Oh, I didn't. I missed that tweet. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're dead to me. It was great.
Lamar's got a very, very good sense of humor. All right, I'm going to finish the Jungle War podcast this week up. With this question to you, Skinny. Last year, it was Orlando Brown Jr. kind of coming out of nowhere, kind of his signing falling to the Bengals. Do you see something like that happening again this year for the Bengals?
Yeah, I'm just going to ask you this question. The tackle movement hasn't been all that lively so far in free agency. I sent a text to my boss this morning, and I said, you know, the longer this goes, I wonder, and I don't think this is going to happen, I wonder, are they trying to find a way to bring Jonah Williams back?
So I asked Paul Daner Jr. that question, and he's like, probably not, but I wouldn't rule anything out. Hey, there's a possibility. I do think, even the harsh feelings aside from last summer, and we remember what Jonah Williams had to work through, not feeling slighted by the Bengals for not supposedly having any communication after they signed Orlando Brown Jr. and being told, okay, you're going to have to move to right tackle. And there were some harsh feelings, but I wouldn't put it past Jonah and the Bengals to kind of like, you know, put a Band-Aid on it. Everything's healed pretty good. Let's move forward. And you're playing for a team that has Super Bowl aspirations every year with Joe Burrow as your quarterback.
Yeah, Mike, I mean, as we're recording this in the early afternoon of Tuesday, I mean, we could get off this podcast and he could sign with somebody in the next 30 sure. minutes for all we know. But, you know, I thought he was going to be fairly coveted in free agency. And it makes me wonder that, you know, the market out there, the maybe the Bengals said, give us a couple of days. You still have, or technically, for those that know, he's still technically under contract with the Bengals till 4 o'clock on Wednesday. So right. they could re-sign him at any time between now and then. And that's why I wonder if maybe the Bengals said, pump the brakes for a second. If you got a figure out there, you got, that's fine. We want to kick a figure back too. I just wonder that now, because I would have thought Jonah would have been maybe even plucked off the market by now. Maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe the value for him out there isn't as much as I think, but I think there's a value for him out there.
and the Bang or the Patriots, I should say, just brought back their own Mike Owenu. That's a big name off the potential markets. So we'll see how it plays out. Anything else on your mind?
No, I do think, like I said, to your point, I think that we're still going to see them sign a defensive tackle, at least one. They're going to have to obviously fill the right tackle need, probably a depth piece at corner. I'm leaning against the receiver, the slot receiver, but maybe that's an option. And honestly, maybe Tyler Boyd's an option to bring back on a one-year deal. I'm not ruling that one out yet either. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm not going to rule that one out either.
But I think if they were to do that, they would have to have confidence that they'd have enough money to do it. That'd be
yeah, nice. But I just wondered, that's sometimes for these guys, when you go to the market and you find out the market isn't what you think it should be for you, you know, sometimes the grass isn't always greener. I do think Tyler will probably strike a two-year deal with somebody out there, probably what he thinks the market is for him, but it may come after a few days.
Yeah, by the way, I'm going to go back to T. Higgins real quick. Your thoughts on Mike Hilton's tweet?
I did not see his tweet. What did he say? I missed his tweet.
Something along the lines of, oh boy. Like, he was stunned that T. Higgins had requested a trade, and everybody wanted to make, you know, a big thing about that the Bengals are turning on the organization, the players are turning on the organization. And I didn't take it that way at all.
Yeah, and I guess that to close that up, to wrap that up, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I know there is hand-wringing about what's T going to be like when he comes back? Is he going to be a malcontent? Listen, Jesse Bates signed it, swallowed hard, and played well. Jonah Williams, right, demanded a trade. Well, is Jonah going to come back and be a pro? Of course he was going to be a pro, and he was. T. Higgins is going to be a pro. He's going to – he's upset. I get that his agent's angry. T. Higgins is going to come in that locker room. He's going to be a good locker room guy. He's going to play hard.
Yep.
He's going to try to, because he's going to try to go do the best he can to get paid.
And there are very good leaders in that locker room, starting with number nine, and especially guys like Sam Hubbard and Mike Hilton. There's enough, and Ted Karras. There are enough leaders in that locker room to keep a guy like that on the even keel. And as a former Patriot once told me, the check clears just the same.
Exactly right. That's the bottom line portion of that program.
Yes, it is. Well, Skinny, I appreciate you joining me on short notice. We've both got a lot going on, obviously, monitoring the NFL free agent whirlwind that is every single year in the second week of March. Anything you want to plug while I have you on here?
I've got a column going up on why the Bengals was the right decision to move on from Joe Mixon and why you shouldn't have been surprised that they did it. That probably will go up at some point this afternoon. And of course, all the signings, getting them up as quickly as I possibly, my fingers can type, Mike.
And that's what I'm doing. As soon as the button flips off on this podcast, I will be doing likewise. All right. He is Richard Skinner, Local 12 Skinny on X. Be sure to follow him for great Bengals coverage and coverage of NFL free agency. My name is Mike Petralia. Thanks for downloading this episode of the Jungle War podcast, as always powered by CLNS Media and Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in all of North America. Until next week, keep that jungle roaring.